the evil corrupter of youth, is going to take him from step one, which is a mere high school diploma, stuffed with a gym sock, to step two, which is a college degree, stuffed with absolutely nothing at all. Smoke that and it'll really get you out there.
I still don't feel as good as I felt this morning. Yeah, yeah.
You'll grow out of it.
Jump me up. I heard it again. Somebody said,
you don't see this?
Wait a minute.
College.
That's college rhythm.
You mean if I smoke that, it's the same as this? As if I went to college. Roll it on up. Roll it on up. Roll it on up. Give me a...
No, the college degree is stuffed with absolutely nothing at all. You get nothing with your college degree.
Oh, that's why
I forgot. I'm sorry.
Well, if you get nothing, well, that's what I want.
A true Zen saying, nothing is what I want. The results of a higher education. Thank you. Thank you very much.
What is that, right there?
Oh, here we go.
All right.
Here we go.
Does anybody here know where Palmdale is?
There and we are at the top of the hour. You are listening to KKCR on LA. K-A-2-A-2-A-L. Yep, that's right. K-2-8-4-A-L. Ala'iva. On the gathering place of Oahu. And this is Kauai Soapbox Live, out of the box special. Got Tim Kalai answering phones. Eric Cannon tapping into the mic and see if that one's gone. Got a phone call lined up. All right, Doug checking things out. Mahalo's Stever for making this transition possible. We got a little bit of Frank Zappa in the background. I want to let you know that this out of the box Kauai Soapbox Live, making space for community to happen radio, is brought to you by the good folks at Kauai Canvas, Kauai Music Festival, and Koholaleo, plus the July Beach Cleanup coming up. And don't want to forget this one. Right off the bat, we'll go there.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Yeah, thank you very much there, y'all. Caduce for helping us out there. And, y'all, we're missing you on a Tuesday, favorite day of the week, and hope you're getting what you need to get done. And I'm going to roll these underwriters, make sure we're all good with that, because... if it wasn't for underwriters, this program probably wouldn't be happening the way that it's happening right now. So we've got to say mahalo to our underwriters and to you, the listeners, the supporters of this community radio. We've got 2 hours of community forum coming right up. The first hour, we're going to be talking primarily with council member Mel Raposo. He'll be joining us by phone. Councilmember Raposo is seeking re-election, so he'll update us on some council affairs and then talk story a little bit about his campaign. We'll bring him up to talk story and take some calls from you. The phone number in the booth is 826-7771. If you want to make a complaint or give us some feedback, give us a call at 826-7774. That's the office number. Dean, Laura Christine, Dove, Eric, somebody might be able to answer the questions or take your complaint and then get it back to us, the volunteers here at the station, because this is a community radio station run by volunteers. Actually, I should say run by staff, but pretty much serviced by volunteers, and that's the way we like it on our community radio. So back to our underwriters, big ups and mahalos to Kauai Canvas, Kauai Music Festival, and Koholaleo for the good stuff that you're doing on our island for our community on KKCR, 90.9 FM Hanalei, 92.7 on Honolulu, 95.1 on the cable dot dial, and 91.9 island-wide. If you are listening to us on Oahu, you might catch us at 104.7. and then streaming worldwide on www.kkcr.org. Thanks, Kauai Canvas, for making this happen.
Kauai Canvas, professional gallery quality G-Clay canvas printing and digital image capture now available on Kauai. Managing print flow, stretching, and even crating. More information at 212-6971 or online at kauaicanvas.com. Kauai Canvas, stretch your imagination.
The 2014 Kauai Music Festival Concert Series is coming to the Courtyard Marriott Resort in Kapa'a. On Friday, August 1st at 7 p.m. is the Po'alima Concert featuring Hotshell Ray, Merlin Hookman Bonds, Mark Feist, Richard Harris, and more. On Saturday, August 2nd at 7 p.m. is the Pauhana Concert featuring Hawaiian favorites Eric Gilliam, Pandanus Club, John Cruz, and many more. Tickets and outlet locations online at kauaimusicfestival.com. The nonprofit Kauai Music Festival is sponsored in part by Hawaiian Airlines, Alaska Airlines, the Hawaii Tourism Authority, and the County of Kauai.
During July, active sonar is being used during RIMPAC war games held in our beautiful Hawaiian waters. This sonar is up to 10,000 times louder than a 747 taking off, which can cause hemorrhaging in the brain and organs, deafness, and stress, all potentially leading to premature death. The Navy also has permits to harm marine mammals using sonar up to 33 million times across the Pacific from here to California over the next 5 years. This is equal to 2,000 deaths of whales and dolphins, 16,000 with permanent hearing loss, and over 5 million cetaceans with temporary hearing loss per year. A deaf whale is a dead whale. To learn more, contact Kohola Leo at 639-3289 or visit whalevoice.org. Be a voice for the oceans.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio, and thank you for helping our programs be the programs that you want to hear. And if you're interested in being a volunteer at Kauai Community Radio, give us a call at 826-7774. You'll probably want to ask for Dove and leave your name and number if you can't talk to anybody. And you can find out how you may also be able to host a music show or a talk story show or just be part of the Ohana here at KKCR to do the good things that we need to do to make it happen. And there's a number of things going on that are always in need of. So mahalos to you, our volunteers and our listeners and our community members who support us here at Kauai Community Radio. I'm also going to play this one as a little July beach cleanup coming on up.
In the last 6 months, Surfrider volunteers removed over 8 tons of trash, fishing nets, and ropes from Kauai's beaches. The Surfrider Foundation organizes beach cleanups on the fourth Saturday of every month. You can help keep Kauai beaches clean. Join our volunteers on Saturday from 9 to noon on July 26th at New Kaliki Beach. If you see large nets and ropes on the beach, please call our Net Patrol hotline at 635-2593. Help protect our beaches and ocean wildlife. A reminder from the Surfrider Foundation.
There you go. So far, so good. We've got the beginning of 2 hours community radio. We're going to get a song up here to help us transition from that wonderful homegrown Garden Island bluegrass song. That show that we had coming up here, you might hear a little bit in the background. Still remnants from Frank Zappa. But this one's going out to Bald-Headed Rick. Bald-Headed Rick, this one is your request. So we'll see how it goes.
Good afternoon, is this Mel Raposo?
Uh-oh, here we go. One of these buttons is the right buttons, I hope.
I'm doing just fine, thank you. Are you ready to go on the road pretty soon?
It's a song called Jesus Loves Me, and it goes very much like this.
Don't move around, though, okay?
I know you smoke, I know you drink that brew. I just can't abide a sinner like you, you know. God can't either, that's why I know it to be true that Jesus loves me, but he can't stand you. Going straight to heaven, boys, when I die, because I've crossed every T and I've dotted every I. Why, my preacher tells me that I'm God's kind of guy. That's why Jesus loves me, but you're going to fry.
God loves all his children, by God. That don't mean he won't incinerate some. Can't you feel those hot flames licking you? Woo-woo-woo.
I'm raising my kids in a righteous way. So don't you be bringing your kids over to my house to play. Why, yours will grow up stoned, left-leaning and gay. I know Jesus told me on the phone today.
Jesus loves me, this I know. And he told me where you're gonna go. There's lots of room for your kind down below.
Jesus loves me. He loves me real good. I know he does. He called me up on the phone today and told me how much he loved me. But son, I love him. He speaks English pretty well, considering it's a second language for him. You can talk to him too. You know, I've got a 900 number in Tulsa you can call him at. I do it all the time. He'd be glad to hear from you. I talk to him every day. Jesus loves me, but he can't stand you.
There we go. That's the Austin Lounge Lizards. And that's Baldhead Rick's request. So, Baldhead Rick, thank you for making that one. And it'll probably be the last request of the day that we'll get going here. I do want to let you listeners know the phone number 826-7771 is the line in, but we've got a phone call from special guest council member Mel Raposo is on the line. Mel, are you there? Mel, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, you can. And again, a little fuzziness there. Your radio's not on, right?
No, I turned it off, but I'm picking up an echo.
Yeah, me too. So let's see where that one's coming from. All right, on. How are you doing this afternoon, Mel?
Good. Trying to stay cool in this heat wave.
It's a little heat. Yeah. Well, I'm being told there's a little echo here. Maybe we might need to call back. Eric, how are you sounding over there?
I'm hearing you really good, but when I speak, I can hear you.
A little better? How about now?
I hear you fine.
All right. And how about you? Do you hear yourself fine?
Oh, yeah. I hear myself fine.
That's better. That's working for me. All right. Mel, thank you for joining us here on Tuesday version of Out of the Box. I think it's called Kauai Soapbox Live, although I think in the last couple of weeks it's been morphing into a little bit of making space. Or Eric, what is Carter's called it on a Tuesday?
What was that?
What's the name of the show?
On Kauai Tuesdays? Soapbox Live?
Something like that. Yeah, yeah.
That's what it always is.
Oh, there you go. We're learning something new as we speak. Mel, I invited you to talk story a little bit about council news and updates. And then also talk about your campaign for re-election. So maybe first we can start out with the council update. What's hot on the ticket for the council meeting tomorrow?
Well, council meeting tomorrow, I think that the hot ticket item is the Kauai Rising petition for the charter amendment. I think that's probably the biggest thing on tomorrow. So yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, no pressure on you. You're the deciding vote, right?
That's what they tell me. You know, I think they set it up that way. You know, I think Joanne went silent just so they could give me the dubious honor of being the swing vote again.
The swing vote again. Now tell us, just for folks who either have been off island for a while or have just recently come here, this, I guess the petition is the second version of a petition that a community group, Kauai Rising, has issued forth and has been promoting. And it is, I guess, controversial for a couple of reasons, right? One, the content or the subject matter of it, the GMO and pesticides and the burden of proof being on the on the seed companies or those who are doing that type of farming. But then they also... Other part of it is it an initiative, is it a referendum, or is it an amendment to the charter? How do you look at it?
And that's where the debate lies right now. I think, as I've read through the minutes, I unfortunately was not at the last meeting, but I did get a chance to take a look at the minutes and read the attorney's opinions. But that's where it boils down to. I mean, what the council members believe, there's two real issues. Whether or not it's an initiative or an amendment, and then the second issue is whether or not the council has the authority to reject the petition, and I think that's what's going to be discussed tomorrow. And I have no idea how the votes will go. I think you can count. I'm not sure what Joanne will do. So whether or not I'm the swing vote is yet to be seen.
Uh huh. And I mean, I'm not going to ask you to show your cards right now, but, you know, just looking at the evidence brought forth, is this as clear as mud? Does it seem to have a couple places where there's confusion, or is it pretty clear cut that this is an amendment and not an initiative?
Well, for me, it's clear that it's an initiative and not an amendment. And you know, I did have a chance to speak to Mr. Schultz and the Kauai Rising folks two meetings ago and try to explain my position that, you know, I mean, if it was just an amendment that would create a new department that would oversee the health and safety, that would be fine, and I definitely would support that. But this one goes into detail of how the office will be set up, and the duties and responsibilities, and including the penalties for any violations, which in my mind, anyway, is clearly an initiative. It's clearly what should be done in an ordinance and not a charter.
Mm-hmm. Now, given that's the case, how do we move forward? It would be unfortunate, it seems like, if this gets hung up or the you know, however many thousands of individuals that signed, that effort is thwarted again for technicality or for whatever reasons. But clearly there's a movement afront to move forward with this type of either legislation or action that looks at safeguarding public health. What do you see as some of the best ways to move forward beyond these sticking points?
Well, I think it's twofold, Jimmy. I think that the charter amendment would have been sufficient, again, like I said earlier, if it was to create that new department within the county, and then to work with the legislators and the administration to create legislation, either through initiative or through the council legislation or bills introduced by the administration for the new department. But simply, I mean, there's no way you can have an ordinance in the charter. It just, the charter isn't built that way. There was never the intent for that. That's why the initiative clause is in the charter. If the citizens want to add an ordinance or to repeal an ordinance, they have that ability through the initiative referendum process. But
mm-hmm.
The charter is, that's the internal, the guiding document for how the county government is run. And that's, I think, the dilemma. And that's what I tried to explain to Mr. Schultz, was that, you know, there's a way to do it, and you really got to pick what you want to do. If you want to do an ordinance, you want to do an initiative, then you go down that road. If you want to do a charter amendment, then you choose that road. So, you know, for me, it's clear. Regardless of what the county attorney said, I really don't have much faith in that office anyway, but, you know, for me, it was clear well before the opinion came out that it was a charter amendment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an initiative and not a charter amendment.
Now, Mel, for folks who are anticipating, you know, the if you will, kind of realization of some type of regulation for GMO activities and pesticide regulations, Do you think that the Charter Review Commission is a viable method for this body to, or this group of coalition of community interests to go to that body and suggest that the Charter Review Commission look at putting something on the ballot?
That's an option, again, but I think the same rules apply, that, you know, the charter, again, was not intended to have those legislative items in there, or enforcement items, penalty sections. That's not in the charter as far as, I mean, outside of the running of the government and the operation of the different departments. So I'm not sure how the Charter Review Commission would look at it. I would assume that the attorneys would provide a similar similar opinion. So I think the only real option, if in fact the Kauai Rising and the people want to see this go through as submitted, would be really to get someone on the council to spearhead that and introduce legislation, or someone from the administration could do the same thing.
Uh-huh.
So what an opportune time, because it's election year, and this is the democratic process at work. I mean, you know, this is the opportunity that the people have to go out and seek the candidates that are willing to do what the people want them to do, and obviously an opportunity to elect new people to the council. So
right,
and that's the beauty of the process.
I'll put you on the hot spot, Mel. Are you that council member to take that forward?
Not at this time. I mean, I think that, you know, I'm still waiting the results. I mean, ironically, tomorrow is the federal court. I'm not sure if the federal judge will make a ruling tomorrow or not. But I think a lot rests on what the courts say as far as the jurisdiction of the county.
Uh-huh.
If in fact there is a county's jurisdiction, which I don't believe it is. I think the way the state law is written, I would agree that the federal law has more preemption clauses for the county, but the state, in my opinion, does.
Uh-huh.
And again, it'll be landmark ruling if the judge, in fact, comes out on Wednesday with a ruling. I think we'll have an indication of what direction the court will go after Wednesday's hearing. Hopefully. Hopefully they don't take it under advisement and wait another 6-8 months. But I'm hoping that they come out with some indication, anyway, some action that will give us an idea of what the courts are feeling.
Is this an example of how slow the wheels of bureaucracy turn? I mean,
Well, I mean, you got the government bureaucracy on the political side, on the county government side, state side, and then you got the judicial process, which in and of itself is a separate story. And that, you know, that takes time. And you know, I'm just hoping, because of the gravity of the situation here in Kauai, that the courts will and the judges will see to it that, you know, they want to get some quick resolution to this matter. And I'm hoping that they come out with something on Wednesday.
Right. I mean, wasn't it just 1 year ago that we were hearing the bill for the first time and then setting up for a very large and long drawn out process of public hearings after public hearings? Whether it was at the council chambers or at the Veterans Center, to listen to both sides of the issue and to make a determination, which ultimately was 2491 being passed. You were consistent in your vote in opposition to 2491. How do you, you know, thinking back a year ago, how do you think that the state has handled it, and how do you think that the county and the administration has handled the, if you will, execution of 2491?
Well, obviously, the start date has been pushed back as an agreement by both sides. But, you know, I think as far as the way the state handled it, you know, we're in a situation today. Hello,
we're there.
Okay, yeah, we're in the situation today simply because the state failed in their duty, and I think that was very evident when the state Department of Ag was up at the council meeting, you know, months ago, and it was clear, and you know, that obviously was the reason why I flew to Honolulu to meet with the governor, because number one was to let him know how terribly pissed off I was with the performance of his Department of Ag.
Right.
And the second thing was to ask for some help, and you know, to get on this island and start to address the concerns of the residents. You know, I made my position very clear early on that the state law gave the counties an opportunity to enforce that state law the pesticide law with a simple memorandum of agreement with the Department of Ag. And, you know, I still stand by that today, that if we do that, if we can get that agreement with the state, then we as a county could enforce the state pesticide law. Up to the point of revoking permits for illegal applications or applications that are in violation of the law. And I stand by that today. And, you know, I hate to say I told you so, but if we had gone down that road, and when I say that, I mean sincerely, it was a sincere interest for the county of Kauai and the state to do what the people wanted us to do, that number one, it would have been done, and number two, we wouldn't be in this lawsuit today. So, you know, I'm disappointed of how it turned out. It's going to cost the county a lot of money to fight this lawsuit, where I believe if we simply work with that agreement that is spelled out in the pesticide law, that the county could be the enforcement arm for the state, and in fact could regulate and do the inspections and make sure that these companies are applying these pesticides in accordance with the law. And if they don't, then the county would have the ability to revoke the permit. So, I mean, you know, hindsight's 2020, I'm just saying I think there was a better way to do it.
Now, let's think about that. So is it the issue of the administration not reaching out to the State Department of Ag, or is it the Department of Ag not having the foresight and the resources to address the issues like you're suggesting, and not working with the county administration saying, hey, we've got a problem, let's throw some resources at this, focus our attention, and get some results?
Well, the state will always take its resources, and, you know, I find that just very hard to believe when you're dealing with public health and safety. I just think that should be a priority. There's a lot of projects that went down this year throughout the state that, you know, millions and millions and millions of dollars. But, you know, so I think, you know, on one side, the state will say they don't have the resources. And the county here on Kauai passed a resolution urging the state to increase the funding for inspectors on Kauai. And so, yeah, I guess it's everybody's not doing their job the way they should. And at the end of the day, you know, the people suffer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, you certainly heard that, you know, folks suggesting that they have suffering going on for people in Waimea Valley and folks that are within proximity to the dust and the spraying and the effects that this type of large-scale ag has on communities. I got somebody called in and wanted to know why didn't the county accept the help from outside legal resources. I know that there was legal assistance being offered pro bono, but the county chose not to go there. Any insight onto that decision, Mel?
No. What we were told was that the procurement panel, when they put out the RFP and they require certain expertises in the fields of law that this would touch on, that the attorneys that submitted their proposals did not meet the qualifications. Obviously, we don't get involved with that part of it, but that's what we were told.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and I would expect the county, when we procure outside counsel, that we would get the best that we could, especially in the field. I will say that the attorneys that we have, that we did hire, are very, very excellent in this field. It's actually pretty refreshing to see these attorneys that we hired in the briefings that I did have with them in executive session, that they're out to win this thing, and they're trying everything they can to win this thing, and I'm actually very pleased with the attorneys that were hired.
Yeah.
They do that with the and
are we going to be I guess tomorrow afternoon we'll have a better idea from the judge as to kind of what side of the fence he's kind of sitting on, and where is the county's kuleana, and where's the state kuleana, and the ability, I guess, of the seed companies to pony up their resources to get the best legal representation that they can buy. How does this help us move as a community? I want to address this issue. You've talked about it a little bit, I think, during the heat and intensity of the hearings, of just the lack of aloha being shown for both sides, and reminiscing about Kauai aloha in the time of Aniki. Mel, how divisive is this, and what do you see as some of the resolution to bring us back together as a community?
Well, I think the start is to determine, you know, what in fact we can legally do. I think once both sides agree and understand what, if any, limitations are there, or there may be no limitations, and the judge may say that the county does have the ability to regulate pesticides. And I think at that point, I would hope anyway that the community could come together and move forward. You know, the difficult thing is staying within the legal framework so that it doesn't get stalled in court, that we can you know, initiate legislation that is within what the courts say we can, and then move forward from there. But, you know, I mean, the dividing of the community, it was probably one of the worst I've seen in my time on the council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a conversation with Jimmy Tokioka recently. We were trying to get him to come on the radio station, talk story about his campaign. And we were talking about the divisive nature of this, and certainly as divisive, if you will, as the super ferry was, maybe even more so. And the need for us to kind of get beyond the rhetoric and get beyond the fear-mongering, because that's what both sides are employing, are scare tactics that we haven't seen in a long time since the super ferry, in regards to, well, what would this mean if we continue to let this go unabated? Mel, the note comes across from a caller, I guess. Are you in support of the GMO companies? Would you consider yourself a supporter, or do you have a position that you take in regards to the seed companies doing what they're doing?
Well, I don't have a real big concern about the GMO process. I mean, I've been to Washington, D.C. I've met with the federal agencies that actually regulate and license these type of activities. So I don't have as much of a concern of the GMO process. I do have concerns about the pesticide use, and that's the angle that I'm approaching is how can we coexist, and you know, if that is even possible. But it's very difficult when we don't have the proper inspections by the state, and the law in and of itself is very difficult to comprehend. You know, I don't know if you've ever read one of those labels. Some of those labels are numerous pages of scientific stuff that's very difficult to understand. But we don't want anything that pesticides kill. I mean, that's what they're designed to do, and they're not very safe if not used properly. So, you know, I don't have the same fears as many regarding the GMO, but I share the concerns for the pesticide use.
Right, and I think that was one of the issues that really surfaced for many of us in regards to the technology, that maybe the technology is tolerable, but the amount of restricted use pesticides or the lack of disclosure or transparency related to use of these implements, these tools as they're called, that folks have great concern about that, and that they're being under emphasized or not given the attention that they need by the responsible parties, whether it's EPA or it's the Department of Health or the Department of Ag. I think a lot of people on the ground at Ground Zero are like, well, who is in charge? Whose kuleana is this? Because it seems like nobody is enforcing or regulating this.
Well, I mean, ultimately it's the state, but if the state isn't doing their job, then the county must step in within the legal authority that they are given. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. It's you know, the county oversteps their boundary, we get sued, and the whole thing gets locked up in court, which is what we're seeing today.
Right.
You know, I think the better option would have been, and I know people don't want to hear this, but really to work with the seed companies to get cooperation and to get voluntary compliance, because I think that would have provided us a much better position than we are in today. And now we're in court, and now it's an adversarial relationship, which may not be in the best interest of the people. I mean, mm-hmm. The lawyers will make money. They will make a lot of money. and we will have to wait at the discretion of the judge. And you know, how long will it take before we get a ruling? I don't know. I'm like I said, I'm hoping on Wednesday we get some indication of what way it will go.
Uh-huh. Right, and before moving on from the GMO pesticide issue, I know that you and I had some conversations right after Vandana Shiva was here on Kauai, and you were there and impressed with the size of the crowd that was there, and the aha moment that you had in realizing that these seed companies really weren't seed companies, they were chemical companies, and they were, if you will, remnants from the World War II chemical warfare industry, and now they're morphing into agriculture, and that was something new for you. We know that this industry is well funded, has a lot of interests, financial interests at stake here on Kauai and throughout the globe. What do you think will be, if you will, the result if the judge comes out in favor of the county, saying that the county does have a jurisdiction? What do you think the industry will do? Is there going to be compliance on their part? Do you think that they're going to pack up and move on to greener pastures elsewhere? Do you have any sense of what they might do?
Well, I don't think they'll leave. I think what will happen is I think you'll see some new legislation being introduced by the county to the council. You know, again, within the legal parameters that are set forth by the judge, I think you will see that. And I think the seed companies will continue to operate within those confines. I don't think they'll leave, simply because I think this is, for them, this is a great place to operate. So I don't think that they'll leave.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I mean, it's very, again, it all depends on, how much authority the court will say that the counties have.
You hear this all the time, that this is anti-ag legislation and that this is the death of ag if this bill becomes law. Do you subscribe to that? Do you buy into that?
No, I don't believe it's anti-ag or ag will die. You know, I think there will always be ag. I just know for a fact that ag is a very difficult industry here in Kauai, and you know, that's going to be the problem. It's the price of land and the cost of the infrastructure and water. It's very difficult for traditional farming to be successful here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that I get from the traditional farmers that are already doing traditional farms.
Right.
So I mean, that's what always going to be the dilemma. What I'm afraid of is if we lose the leaseholders of these large acres of land, you know, what will replace them? Because at the end of the day, the land is still valuable, and it's still owned by someone who's going to get the best dollar they can get off of that land. So, I mean, that's I don't know. I don't know what would replace it. I don't know if traditional farming could, and they could make it work.
Mm-hmm.
That's yet to be seen.
Well, there's definitely some options out there, alternative models for alternative models for agriculture, whether it's kind of scaled down and more for local food production, or looking at other commodities such as hemp for fuel or for fiber. Mel, I'm going to move on to other topics that you see as important items that voters should be aware of, that's on the council plate, that you guys are working through right now as we speak.
Well, I think, and I'm not sure if you heard, but I think right now what's surfacing is the real property tax increases that were implemented. And, you know, there's some very unhappy people that have received their tax bills and are basically in shock because of the increase that they received. One 85-year-old gentleman from Honolulu, you know, his property tax went up, and he lives in the house, lived in the house over 40 years. His property tax went up from $5,000 a year to $20,000 a year. He got a $15,000 a year jump. And I think over the last few days I've had, you know, half a dozen or so calls about that, and it's kind of disturbing. It's kind of scary. What do these people do? I mean, are they going to be forced to sell the property? This 85-year-old gentleman cannot afford the tax. So, you know, he more than likely would have to sell that property. And That's exactly what I didn't want to happen, and that's why I did not support the tax increases the way it was introduced. You know, I'd asked for more time so we could do a much better analysis of the model so we could see the types of increases or decreases people would get. And, you know, the council felt that they needed to rush this through to balance the budget, and now we're in a very difficult position. And some of the residents here, and I would suspect there's many, will be in a position where they may have to sell their property. So,
and Mel, that change in the tax rate and the tax structure, was that initiated by the council, or was that an administrative action?
I believe it came over from the administration as a request.
Mm-hmm. And so, real briefly, what was the change, or what was the shift? Did we add a different class, or did we just change the rate?
Well, we changed the rate. We removed the cap, and I think the removing of the cap really affected a lot of these property owners. You know, some of the exemptions were increased, but, you know, it's just some of these properties are valued very high, and it's just a shame, you know, and I'll use that 85-year-old gentleman. It's a shame to see him, you know, possibly lose his house.
Right.
And you know, yeah, we needed to raise money. But again, Jimmy, you know, I was always an advocate for reducing spending before we resort to raising taxes.
So we don't always have to raise revenue. We can reduce the budget, or we can make some cuts.
Yeah, exactly.
Reduce, you know, a position or two.
Yeah, and that's what I had hoped to see in his budget. And you know, we just didn't get it. So it's a sad day. I mean, it is.
And do you see that as being an election issue for both the mayor and council candidates?
Well, I can tell you that it is for the ones that I spoke to. You know, I can tell you that they have completely, this issue has affected the way they vote. And that's just from the few conversations I've had with some of these people that have had their taxes increased substantially.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, because they realize that it's not sustainable. I mean, what do we do next year? I mean, really, what do we do next year? We won't be in any better position next year to operate the county. So that leaves us with no choice again but to raise taxes. And, you know, we're asking the people to, hey, you know, we're going to make this correction. We're gonna try and bring the tax base more, bring more equity. And we're going to try and do it all in 1 year. But the reason was we needed the money to balance the budget. If you wanted to bring back the taxpayers to a more equitable formula, you do it over a course of 5 to 10 years. So the increases are gradual. But to try to do it all in 1 year, this is what you'll see. And I suspect there's a whole bunch more out there that are just trying to figure out how they're going to pay it. And that's a dilemma, and I think that's going to be causing some issues going forward. I'm not sure how we address it. I'm trying to get a better idea of how many people are affected. And then it's probably going to have to revisit that bill. Unfortunately, it's not something we can do every Wednesday. We can just adjust tax rates, but
right,
we definitely need to take a look and see how big of an impact we really caused.
Right, right. I got a question here handed to me from a caller. Did the big corporations, I'm taking it to C Corp, did they get higher taxes, or are they being subsidized? And maybe that's related to the bill that Councilmember Tim Bynum had introduced a couple of sessions back.
They're not getting subsidies. They're getting the same rate as the other farmers are. They're getting the ag rate that all the other farmers are getting.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the premise was that they should pay a different rate, since it's not traditional ag that's being sold at markets locally. It's being ag farm or ag land being utilized for research and development, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
Yeah, it was basically, if you're not producing a crop that is ultimately purchased by a user, then it would come under another category.
Another category. And you didn't support that, or you did? I can't remember.
Well, it got deferred because, you know, there are a lot of questions regarding the, you know, how many farmers out there, traditional farmers, not the seed companies, farm a product that doesn't end up on someone's plate. You know, there may be...
Like cut flowers or mahogany trees...
Correct.
Yeah.
And you know, raising feed for animals. I mean, that's not going to a consumer. Now, do we charge them
right
the higher rate? I don't think we should. I mean, I think that's traditional farming or ranching. So there are a lot of questions, and that is what the deferral was for.
So, Mel, I've got a. Are you willing to take a phone call? We got somebody who wanted to ask a question on the air.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks, Mel. Aloha, caller. You are joining Mel Raposo, council member, on the air with Jimmy Trujillo and Kauai Community Radio.
Hey, aloha, Mel.
Aloha.
This is Ballheaded Rick, man. I met you when I was registering my rifles. I had take them over to the police station and no more in the case.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
You remember me?
Yeah, sir.
The lady had wrapped them in the newspaper for me. Wow, come on, man. You can't bring the rifle without the case.
Yeah, I remember that clearly.
Okay. So I just really want to aloha you and say thank you for stepping up the plate and bringing it out. You know, I mean, we all want the same thing. You know, it's not like, God, on Facebook last night I got accused of all the Howleys are wanting to come down on ag. No, we're not coming down on ag. We're just, wanting to be Pono. You know, we want it to be, transparent, and we don't want our reefs dying, and, you know, I know West Side needs all the jobs they can get, but, I just don't know if the seed stuff is the way to go.
Well, so. I would agree that, you know, I believe we all want to get to the same result. And, you know, it's some of us believe that we're bound by certain rules and laws and that sometimes is an obstacle for what we want to do. But, you know, I'm very conscious of the legal side, and I'm very conscious of what happens when things end up in court. I've been doing this long enough to know that, you know, there's a better way to do this than end up in court.
Yeah.
And there's always a better way. And, you know, people, you know, I know people criticize me as being, hey, you're pro seed company, whatever the case is, but at the end of the day, my job is to make sure that our funds aren't being wasted with attorneys, to the point where now we got to raise taxes. And I mean, that's my deal.
That's what we opened up with, a big cage of bonuses for lawyers right now, you know? And it could have been handled a better way.
I agree.
So, God bless you, Mel, and you got my vote.
Thank you, sir.
There you go. Okay. Thank you, Bald-Headed Rick, for calling in. Mel, we got another 10 minutes before. I know you got a campaign meeting at 5 o'clock. Let's talk a little bit about your campaign. You're seeking re-election. This is your, would it be your fourth term that you'll be going back for, or is it going on five?
You know, I was thinking about this as I was driving in. Like, my God, my first election was in 1998. So this will be, I believe, my eighth campaign. So this is... going for my sixth term
on the council. You ran for mayor a couple of years back, or ran against unsuccessfully against Bernard Carvalho Jr. You ran with Joanne Yukimura and I'm trying to think of Rolf Bieber was the fourth candidate that year. Didn't make it to the primary, so you sat out a year and then came back and have been on the council representing. What do you think you offer? What is it that you bring to the table, and why would voters want to bring you back, Mel?
Well, I think experience. I think, you know, the fact that I've matured over the years. You know, I think when I look back to my first couple of terms, you know, it was kind of radical and emotional and I still have those moments at times, but I think that, you know, I've learned a lot over the years.
That's what we love about you, Mel. You're radical and you're emotional.
Well, I only know one way to do it, and it's really to speak my heart so that the public, they don't have to guess. I mean, you know, it's not a popularity contest. I try not to do things for votes. I don't consider that, but, you know, I do really enjoy listening to the people and try to do my best for what I think is best for the community. You'll never have to guess where I'm laying on an issue, and that doesn't mean I don't change. I mean, I've changed my position several times on the council after getting more information, but I think just the experience and you know, the I've obviously served in numerous leadership roles on the council as well as the state association of counties. So I've earned that respect and credibility throughout the state and with our national association. So I think that's important. I think when the people look at a council, you know, that they need to have those people that have those connections that can call Washington, D.C. and get some answers. And believe me, we do that a lot. And don't get the results as quick as I'd like, but nonetheless, I think the people deserve that connection, and I enjoy being that connection for them. So.
Well, there you go. We have another caller, Mel. You're willing to take one more?
Sure.
Here we go. Aloha, caller. You're on the air with Councilmember Mel Raposo.
Hi. Thanks, Mel. Right, now, I read in the paper today there's another lawsuit against the county involving a lifeguard who saw somebody stealing gas and became a whistleblower and was treated very badly, and now he's suing the county. He's the second one to do it. There's also been a number of lawsuits, you know, that are race-based or based on some sort of bigotry, or this one's based on whistleblowing. It sounds like cronyism and, you know, nepotism. All these things are prevented, and all you guys meet behind closed doors and settle these lawsuits, so we never find out about them. It seems like they could all be prevented with proper management. Maybe if we had a proper county manager, all these lawsuits wouldn't happen in people's property taxes. Can you tell us how much money the county dished out last year in lawsuits that we can't hear about them because you do them in secret? And we want to know about the cost of these lawsuits and property taxes wouldn't be going up. Can you tell us? Because it seems all unnecessary and preventable. And shame on whoever gave this guy, this whistleblower, harassed him, because he deserved to be able to tell us that people were stealing gas. You know, we need to know that, because people can't help themselves with our tax dollar. And I'm ashamed of our county officials who did that to him. Can you speak now about this?
I sure can, and I appreciate the call. And
yeah,
I agree with
call.
You. I tell you right now, I agree with you. I will say that every settlement that the county ever gets into is public. It's not done in private sessions. It is the vote for settlement is done in open session. And I don't have that number for you, sir, but my email is melraposo@gmail.com. If you email me, I'll definitely get that answer for you tomorrow when I get back to the office.
So it's melraposo@gmail.com.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say that I'm equally as disturbed as these allegations. Again, they're allegations, and they deserve to be investigated. I'm not happy at all. I will say that management is an issue. That we look at and we take seriously. Again, the council is limited to what we can do. You know, we're a legislative branch, but I can tell you that we do hold the administration accountable. And at the end of the day, the council decides whether or not we settle. Unfortunately, because of insurance companies, once it reaches a threshold, our authority is taken away and the case is settled by the insurance company and not myself. I will tell you, I vote on settlements very often. I believe some of these cases deserve to be in court. Yes, it'll cost us money, but it'll also send a message that we're not just going to settle cases. That, in fact, some of these cases deserve to be in court and deserve to be heard out. But I'm one of seven, and majority rules, and oftentimes I'm not very successful with convincing the others. So I agree with you. I share your concerns. And today we had two lawsuits, actually. We had one regarding the Mike Sheehan suing the county, and we had that fireman. So it's continuing to mount, and I will tell you this. The more we settle, the more cases we will get. And until we put a stop to that and start taking these things to court, we can expect more of the same.
And what do you think, Mel, is the, I guess, the county attorney's rationale for settling? Is it thinking that we can just cut our losses and better to just pay out right now, utilize the insurance settlement, as opposed to wanting to fight this or to try to go ahead and win one in court?
Well, number one, the first comment you made is usually what happens when they do the cost analysis. It's much more cheaper for the taxpayer to settle. Now, I don't support that theory because we continue to get lawsuits. The other one regarding the insurance companies, when the insurance company takes the case, they take the authority from the council. So we no longer even have the ability to say no.
So you give up?
Once the insurance company takes the claim and they decide to take the case, then we can't even, it's over. They basically work with the people suing.
they come to an agreement, and the case is done.
There we go. We had a phone call, or maybe it was a follow-up on the Kauai Springs lawsuit that went to executive session. What was the final outcome of that, do you recall, with the Kauai Springs?
No, I don't. I believe that was a request for funding. I believe the county prevailed in that case. We did go to court, and we did prevail. And I may be wrong, but I believe it maybe went up on appeal.
Uh-huh.
But again, I can follow up on that. And, you know, please, if anyone of your listeners have any questions, you know, again, that email works. It comes to my cell phone. So I get it almost instantly. And again, melreposo@gmail.com.
There we go. melreposo@gmail.com is one way. You can also send message to your Facebook page. You also have a Friends of Mel Reposo on Facebook as well. Upcoming campaign work for you. I know you said you got a meeting tonight. What are you anticipating going on? I'm sure you're confident you'll make it past the primaries into the general. What do you look forward to in the coming months for campaigning and the upcoming election?
Well, first of all, Jimmy, I'm not confident. I'm never confident. We were confident in 2008 that I would make it past the primary in the mayor's race, and I didn't. So, this year is going to be a very interesting election.
Very.
You look at all the controversial issues. I've oftentimes been on the minority side, so I know I've disappointed some of my old supporters that have personally told me they're not going to vote for me. Likewise, I've come across people that said that they never voted for me, and they will. So, you know, in this game of politics, you never know. We never take things lightly. We'll work hard. I've just been very busy with so many things going on. I haven't been as visible out on the campaign as I should have been to the primary, but that's what our meeting is about tonight. You know, we're hoping to put out a strategy and work for it. I think for us, the incumbents, we have an advantage because, I missed two forums because of a national conference that I had to be at in New Orleans. But my comments would have been the same at both of them was, when they give you that free couple minutes to speak, is, you know, don't listen to what incumbents say they're going to do. Look at what they've done. I mean, the newcomers, first-time runners, you know, obviously don't have the experience, they don't have the track record, but I think people can look back and when you look at the collective years that I've served on the council as it related to the environmental protection, shoreline, and TVRs on ag land and all of that, I think I've been a very strong advocate. And this issue with the GMOs and pesticides, I think a lot of people felt that I disbanded them or I abandoned them, and that's simply not the case. You know, I got to deal within the parameters of the law, and I take that very seriously. But I think, like the caller said earlier, I think we're all trying to get to the same place, to keep this island safe for our residents and visitors. And we just maybe have different paths to get there.
There we go. Mel, I got one last quick caller. I got a follow-up question to the lawsuit answered. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Mel. You've always been there when people call and ask you for help. You're always there as far as I have observed over the years. But regarding the Kauai Springs lawsuit, that one was secret. That went into executive session. We didn't know how much Kauai Springs was asking for. This was regarding their interruption of business because they had to go to the Planning Commission so much, which was their own fault because complaints were filed against them and they refused to comply with what the commission was asking them to do. So they sued the county for interruption of business. And it went into executive session. I submitted some testimony to give a guideline on how this should be looked at regarding their usage of water and whatnot, the gallons they claim per day, and if the lawsuit was over that amount of gallons, and they shouldn't be getting that. They shouldn't have gotten that lawsuit anyway. But that, I never knew the outcome of that. I put effort into submitting testimony, and I wasn't privy to hearing any outcome on it.
Okay, while the case was being litigated and the demands and outside of what was presented in the actual complaint, that, you know, would have been confidential. But once the case was resolved, that becomes public record. I can provide you all the information you want.
This is not regarding the court case on whether or not they are allowed by the state to use that water or set up the water bottling business. This was a personal damages kind of thing where they, their business was interrupted, so they were demanding money from the county. That was an aside. That was on the side from the main court case.
Right.
You were there.
Yeah, no, I was there. What happened is it was a planning commission issue. But the legal authority or the appealing authority for the planning commission is the court. So again, I can get those documents for you. That case, again, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong, but I believe it's back on appeal. And if it's still on appeal, then it will be, confidential, but I can get more information for you. I unfortunately apologize. I'm not real versed on that right now.
Well, they asked for a certain amount of money. I didn't know what the certain amount of money was. Nobody did. And we don't know if they got it or not. But it was resolved that day.
I don't believe they got any money, but I can verify tomorrow morning and get back to you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
There you go. So give Mel Raposo an email at melraposo@gmail.com. Mel Raposo, it's 5 o'clock. We're at the top of the hour. Really appreciate you joining us for the short amount of time that we have. I'm sure we'll have you back on before the election is over. Any last words you want to share before we go to the top of the hour?
Well, Jimmy, again, thanks for inviting me on. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. I know our schedules sometimes don't work out right, but as often as you want me on, as often as I can make it, I enjoy being on your show. I enjoy the questions, and I'm hoping that people will submit more questions to my email, and answer as much of them as I can. We deal with so many issues, and I try to keep all of those things in my head, and sometimes it gets a little difficult. But we got the resources back at the office, and I can address any of the concerns. But other than that, I want to continue to serve, Jimmy. I want to continue to serve Kauai, and I'm hoping that your listeners will consider me on election day.
There we go. Well, thank you, Mel, for joining us. Good luck with the rest of the campaign, and have a great meeting at 5 o'clock. I'm going to flip on out and go to our top of the hour stuff because you are listening to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, 90.9 FM Hanalei, 92.7 Anahola Mulawa'a area, 91.9 FM island-wide. That's our signal, 104.7 FM on Oahu and streaming worldwide at www.kkcr.org. Going to play some Wave Riders. We got a little live music coming on up here in a couple of minutes. Want to let you know that this Kauai Soapbox Live Out of the Box special, made possible by the good folks at Caldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, Aya's Garden Supply, Al Pastor Tacos, and the Koloa Plantation Days.
Caldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, and Hanalei, serving Kauai since 1978, providing personalized real estate sales and rental services. Caldwell Banker, Bali High Realty, also supports KKCR and the Kauai Independent Food Bank. More information at balihigh.com or by calling 826-7244.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Al Pastor Tacos supports KKCR, across the street from the craft fair in Kapa'a by the beach. Al Pastor Tacos serves fresh grilled local fish, steak, chicken, and pork tacos, and burritos in the Al Pastor style. Also a garden salad and choices for the kids. Open every day from 11 to 4. Takeout orders welcome. Al Pastor Tacos, authentic Mexican food. 652-6953.
Announcing the 29th Annual Koloa Plantation Days, July 18th through the 27th, celebrating Kauai's plantation roots for 10 days with a wide variety of fun and interesting activities for the whole family. The festival culminates with a parade in Koloa Town on Saturday, July 26th, featuring horseback and walking units, floral floats, vintage cars, and decorated vehicles in a great hometown parade. Celebrating the workers' camps in plantation towns, followed by the park celebration featuring local favorites Frank DeLima and Augie T, hula by halau kale mokihana o leima ala, tsunami taiko drumming, and leadwork ka'apana and mike ka'ava. More information about the entire festival online at koloaplantationdays.com.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. This is Jimmy Trujillo with Tim Kalai answering the phones. Phone number is 826-7771. We had Mel Raposo joining us for the last 40 minutes, so thanks for the calls and callers. Last caller, apologize for dropping the phone call as quick as I did, but I needed to get to the top of the hour. In the second hour, we're going to have Richard Stevens joining us. Richard Stevens is the author of a book called Tropical Organic Gardening, Hawaiian Style, but he's also an expert in preserving historic trails, and he's got a presentation along with other I guess we'll call it a seminar, and it's preserving ancient access. So it's an access-related seminar dealing with the what, why, where, when, who, and how. This will be at the Kauai Christian Academy Gym, Lighthouse Road in Kilauea. This is on Saturday, the 16th of August. That's from 9 to 5. There'll be a workshop with Dennis Hart, who's a trail advocate, Richard Stevens, who's a history professor at the University of Hawaii, Tom Pierce is attorney of law from Maui Land and Law, Ted Blake, Uncle Teddy Blake from the South Shore and crew. They'll be talking about what ancient trails should be located, when should they be located, native rights, and using Hapa Trail as one of the examples. Mary Jane Naone will also be there. She's from the State Historical Preservation District or department. She's the Kauai archaeologist. Eric Burton, a Kauai resident, will be presenting about how are Kauai's ancient trails located. And Debbie Chang, how do we hold the state and county accountable for ancient trail protection? So this is an upcoming seminar that will be here in the North Shore in Kilauea at the Kauai Christian Academy Gym. That's 9 to 5 on Saturday, August 16th, coming on up. Later on in the show, we're going to have Richard Stevens joining us to talk a little bit about ancient trails and the importance of them, and some of the things that Dr. Stevens will be covering at this presentation. Before we go there, though, we'll have him on the phone. We're going to get one more set with T. Lars and the and the Faithful Few, or the Mango Pickers. They're going to be joining us here very shortly. We're going to play this disclaimer for all of you. Mahalo's X-Man for doing this, what you do the best.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
Right on. So, live from the community radio station here in beautiful Hanalei, Princeville, North Shore, Kauai. Take it away, boys.
Something about a boat sitting on a sea, out there in the wind, floating on the breeze. Take you around the world and get you back home. Something about a boat gives a man hope. Something about this old guitar and the way she still rings after all the smoky bars and all the broken strings. Played a million songs, broke a lot of hearts, made some people start. Something about this old guitar, and ain't it crazy how something seems like nothing at all. Takes a big old world to make it feel so small. Seeing the windows when they're all wild. Something out of nothing at all. dog. Pigs are my best friend.
Okay, let's do it. One more from T. Lars and Faithful Few. In the background. The horses up to the stall, went to the bar room, ordered drinks for all. 3 days in the saddle, you know my body hurt. If it's summer, I took off my shirt and I tried to wash off some of that dusty dirt. West Texas cat. Shout him now, no, he never saw.
shot me another, that man will go. In the confusion, Mom grabbed the door, and we hightailed it down to Mexico. I love the cowboy, I love the gold, I love my uncle, God rest his soul. Taught me good, Lord, taught me all I know. He taught me so well, I grabbed that coat, and I left this dead ass lay by the side of the road.
During July, active sonar is being used during RIMPAC war games held in our beautiful Hawaiian waters. This sonar is up to 10,000 times louder than a 747 taking off, which can cause hemorrhaging in the brain and organs, deafness, and stress, all potentially leading to premature death. The Navy also has permits to harm marine mammals using sonar up to 33 million times across the Pacific from here to California over the next 5 years. This is equal to 2,000 deaths of whales and dolphins, 16,000 with permanent hearing loss, and over 5 million cetaceans with temporary hearing loss per year. A deaf whale is a dead whale. To learn more, contact Kohola Leo at 639-3289 or visit whalevoice.org. Be a voice for the oceans.
Right on. Be a voice for the ocean. Thanks so much, T. Lars, the Mango Pickers, the Faithful Few, and the... Beauty of live radio in the studio. Mahalo's for that. And we've got about 45 minutes of this Kauai Soapbox Live. We're going to have Professor Richard Stevens joining us here by phone very shortly. We're going to figure out the phone calls. 826-7771 if you'd like to share your mana'o about what you've heard or what's going on in the near future. Got a couple of announcements coming up, but I want to go back to this one. Bald-headed Rick, we love you. So does Jesus.
It's a song called Jesus Loves Me, and it goes very much like this. I know you smoke, I know you drink that brew. I just can't abide a sinner like you, you know. God can't either, that's why I know it to be true that Jesus loves me, but he can't stand you. I'm going straight to heaven, boys, when I die, because I've crossed every T and I've dotted every I. Why my preacher tells me that I'm God's kind of guy. That's why Jesus loves me, but you're gonna fry.
God loves all his children by God. That don't mean he won't incinerate some. Can't you feel those hot flames licking you?
I'm raising my kids in a righteous way, so don't you be bringing your kids over to my house to play. Why, yours will grow up stoned, left-leaning, and gay. I know Jesus told me on the phone today.
Jesus loves me, this I know, and he told me where you're gonna go. There's lots of room for your kind down below. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Jesus loves me. He loves me real good. I know he does. He called me up on the phone today and told me how much he loved me. But son, I love him. He speaks English pretty well, considering it's a second language for him. You can talk to him too. You know, I've got a 900 number in Tulsa you can call him at. I do it all the time. He'd be glad to hear from you. I talk to him every day. Jesus loves me, but he can't stand you.
Wow.
the self-righteous Herschel Fundman.
There we go, Lounge Lizards again for Bald-Headed Rick, because we can. I've got Dr. Richard Stevens joining us here on the phone. I'm going to pull him up. Aloha, Doctor. Are you there?
I am, but you're coming in very faintly now.
Very faintly. I'll raise that one up. How's that?
That sounds much better.
Terrific. Well, thank you for joining us here on Kauai Community Radio. You're coming into Kauai next month, August 16th, for an event that's looking at a variety of trail and access issues. This is Learn from Expert Advocates. This is Preserving Ancient Access, a Kauai seminar, which is going to be Kauai Christian Academy Gym on August the 16th from 9 to 5. And you're going to be speaking about why ancient trails of Hawaii are important. Sir, before we get into that, can you tell us just a little bit about your background, where you're from, and how you got involved with this?
I've been involved with trails ever since I was a kid, fascinated with animal tracks, animal trails, and Native American trails. Lived in an area where those were all present, and their stories that they told, the mysteries that unfolded from them, were just fascinating to me as a little kid. My grandpa took me out in the back 40 of his farm in Iowa, pointed to this mysterious line curving through the trees and said, "That's an old Indian trail. Your grandma and I remember when they still used to come through here." And I looked at that trail and how it disappeared off in the trees, and I was totally captured. I could see them coming, and I wanted to be part of that too. So trails have exerted this fascination on me ever since I was a small kid. That got enhanced, I would say, throughout my life there, just learning to track and to the learning to follow trails, both game trails and Native American trails. And then in Vietnam, I became passionately interested in the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and eventually was on reconnaissance missions to find that trail. That was a kind of mythical trail out there in the mountains and the jungles, and it was the key to the success of the other side in the war. So we spent a lot of effort trying to stop the flow down it, or even to find it out there, and that was my job for part of my time in Vietnam, was looking for that mysterious trail. And coming to Hawaii then, my Hanai mother over on Oahu was a seed collector and limu picker, and so on her expedition, she took me along and showed me the trails that were still up in the Waianae Mountains and down along the shore, too. And so this fascination with trails in various parts of the world led to me being hired in 1990 by the state to inventory trails in the northern half of the Big Island. And so I had a huge territory to look through, and hundreds of trails that were still out there hadn't been used or seen mostly by anyone for 100 years or more. And there I was out there tracking them, finding them, mapping them, and that just lit up my mind even more with the old fascination and old love that I had for trails. I wrote my master's thesis and PhD dissertation on a trail, the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and those both became books. So trails have really been part of my life, and still are. Right now I work on several trail projects over here, now coupled with the reforestation. So the restoration of trails, the restoration of the native forest, those things just go together, and I'm an ardent practitioner of both.
Wow, I mean, from a childhood interest to a lifelong passion and professional endeavor. You are a professor at the University of Hawaii. Is that University of Hawaii Manoa, University of Hawaii Hilo?
It's the UH Center at West Hawaii in Kealakekua, and I'm a lecturer there and have been for 26 years, and so I've got my students involved in this, too. I tell them that we are now living, I'm telling you this, too, this century is going to become known as the Age of Restoration. We just got through the 20th century, well, 14 years ago, seems like yesterday.
It does.
But that century has the rather unfortunate name of the Age of Anxiety, Now it's time for the age of restoration, and a lot of the things that we've lost, we're going to restore. And this is really happening all over the world. And whether it's, the Hawaiian Renaissance here in the cultural sense, people are involved with restoring the lowland dry forest here, the upland forest. We are into restoration. And as I said, it's going on all over the world, and I'm convinced that we're going to make this the age of restoration, the 21st century.
Wow. Kudos for you for helping to kind of bring that on and raise that awareness.
Well, if I could just interject
there,
I feel like you are now part of that awareness also, and everybody listening, that the more we start using terms like this, the more it will happen, both in our own lives as individuals and as a worldwide society, too. So just publicizing this, getting it out there, using it as much as we can, will shift the thinking from, say, negative about what's going on with the environment to what can I do? How can I be part of this? And restoration of culture, restoration of nature, it's happening in a big way all around us.
Nice. Thank you so much for bringing that even clearer to our listening audience and those in the booth at the moment. Tim Kalai joining me also on the phone, or rather in the booth. Tim is the one that made the initial contact with you. Tim, share with our listeners a little bit about this workshop coming up.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. Am I on, Jimmy? There you go. Well, basically, this workshop is a culmination of, a lot of hard work that I got to certainly, hold in the limelight. That is, my beloved wife, Hope Kalai. She's been working this thing for a couple of decades now, and as always, it just starts out as a love and a passion, and she's been hard and diligently working at this, and trying to, bring to the forefront something that has always been very endeared to us, but it was brought to our forefront when we had a couple of kapuna actually look to us, and in particular to Hope, and say to her, girl, this is kind of your kuleana, and the kuleana is that you make sure that we always have, this ancient coastal lateral trail, in effect, always open for us so that we, the people, will be able to utilize and be able to access, our icebox, our refrigerator, for those resources that we need to sustain ourselves, i.e. fishing, limu, things of this nature. God bless, our beloved and kapuna that have passed on, both Auntie Loke Pereira and Auntie Luella Zablon, that is Naukana's mother, and Naukana does our radio program, cultural radio program on Saturdays here at KKCR.
Mm-hmm.
It was his beloved mother and Auntie Loke both, that kind of looked at us and said, you people, and in particular Hope, as the chosen one, that you got to work and make sure that we establish and somehow keep this open. But through the course of working, or her workings, she constantly has been, confronted with a number of challenges and hurdles and sometimes even roadblocks, that have made it difficult for us to keep our path open and clear. We're not understanding, and through, the course of just days and time rolling by, we've had a number of encounters on all levels, be it, within our counties, even starting with the private developers or landowners, that maybe not cognizantly aware or understanding, the law. And when we refer to the law, we specifically point towards the 1892 Highways Act that Queen Liliuokalani, before her last act that she, kind of put through before she was deposed, by the overthrowing or the oppressing government. It was a law that she enacted. And I'm sure that Dr. Stevens could articulate, considerably more upon this, but this is what we refer to and constantly look at. But, once again, private landowner, landowners, developers, you know, without that understanding, you know, when they come and they either purchase large tracts or things like this, you know, inherently they've got this mindset that, well, it may have existed then, but today is today, and guess what? This is my property, and I'm just going to fence everybody out or keep things, you know, like this. So here we go through this long process of either conflict or just basically, you know, trying to educate, you know, folks. And this is, I think, what has finally come to fruition at this point, or our understanding, is bringing the right people to the table so that we don't have to go through a litigious kind of a process. Rather, we'd like to just basically come to an understanding and gain knowledge through educating ourselves, you know, and through this process, hopefully, begin to resurrect or to restore, you know, these elements, you know, that we've always wanted. And that is, once again, that with, there are trails out there. Trails are this living thing, I think, here on Hawaii, as is any place, you know, once they start, and once you use them and things of this nature. And even though they're considered historic and old, they may have even been, let's say, through the process of time and the passage thereof, you know, they may have disappeared into the oceans already. But that does not mean that they do not continue to exist and kind of morph or continue to find its own way or, you know, countenance in a place and space on our lands today, you know. And we feel that that's really important. So once again, by trying to work with the agencies through the state or counties, we've had difficulties and hardships, you know, and we know that numbers of people throughout the state, that is on different islands, are facing these very same issues, you know. And so we would like to acknowledge, you know, those in the forefront, our mentors or people that have been working on things a lot longer than we even have, that is Hope and myself on the island, you know, to honor their works and their things, as well as to bring together the knowledge that they have contained through their hardships, their challenges, and bring that so that we don't have to reinvent or go through those same processes. You know, after 20 years, we're tired. You know, there's no other way to put it, you know, of constantly being rejected or somehow proving, you know, why is the burden of proof on us, you know, when there's a law that should be protecting these resources, you know, and we constantly have to go to this place and space where we're trying to literally bring or to educate the public about this. And we don't feel that that is really the proper way to deal with this. You know, somehow or another, the institution that is the trustee of this, that is the state through the process or through the Department of of Land and Natural Resources, you know, the Na'alehele program, these kind of people, you know, and these programs or institutions have been set up to be protecting our resources, not like acting or closing them down as if though they don't exist. So we're kind of at a quandary here, and we're trying to seek, once again, help from outside sources such as Dr. Stevens, you know, to help us understand and to educate us. And that's what this whole workshop is about, you know. So that, Dr. Stevens, please, if you could chime in anytime.
That's coming up on August 16th. It's a couple of weeks away, Saturday in Kilauea. Dr. Stevens, I'm going to ask you to answer this question. Why are ancient trails of Hawaii important?
Herb Kane, our beloved and departed artist, historian, founder of the Polynesian Voyaging Society and principal builder of the first voyaging canoe, said, a culture without its artifacts is nothing. And that's a very scary thing to think about, that losing your artifacts is really losing the culture itself. And trails are a precious artifact. Debbie Chang, first head of the state Na'alehele program, Big Island native who lived on Kauai for many years also, said that trails are part of a living culture, a unique heritage, living treasures that show the ingenuity and survivability of Hawaiians in the natural world. And those trails connect us to them. They connect us to the kupuna, to the amakua. They connect us to the land itself. Trails are a precious artifact, and they have the opportunity to teach us, to inspire us, to link us to the past. I mentioned in an earlier conversation with Tim that trails are paths through time, You just think, when you're standing on an ancient trail, you're putting your feet in the place where the people of old put their feet. You are directly connected to them. D.H. Lawrence, the great English writer, wrote that I am part of the earth, my feet know perfectly well. And when we put our feet on an ancient trail, we are connected to the ancestors. And that's a beautiful thought.
That is, and that speaks to the importance or the value of our ancient trails. It's exciting to think about that. You will be joined by a number of other professionals and other advocates and passionate individuals talking about preserving ancient access. This is a seminar that is going to be held on Saturday, August 16th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Long day, but it's got a number of different breakout sessions, mid-break in between, featuring you yourself, Richard Stevens, Dennis Hart from the Alakahakai Trail Association, Tom Pierce from Maui Land and Law, Teddy Blake from the Hapa Trail down on the South Shore, local activist and organizer, State Historical Preservation Archaeologist for Kauai, Mary Jane Na'oi, Eric Burton, who is doing some GPS, ancient Kauai trail mapping. Debbie Chang, she will also be there. She's from Emau Na'alehele. She's a trail protector. And then Lucien Denaye. So some people from off-island that are going to be coming here. And hopefully you, the interested Kauai resident, will be participating in this. Again, it's a free workshop seminar being offered on Saturday the 16th from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tim, other comments you want to make?
Well, you know, here too, if I could, you know, I'd love to hear Dr. Stevens, you know, talk about his latest endeavors, you know, with the trail. He has been sharing quite a bit over the phone, and it sounds just ultimately fascinating to me, you know, about this new project that they've just delved into. So, Dr. Stevens, if you could take it from there, I would really, love to hear our listeners, you know, if you can express some of the works that you're doing on the Big Island.
There's a lot of positive things happening out there, and just to all your listeners, I would say that anyone who comes to this event, if they don't have it already, will go away with a fascination for trails and a love for trails. That once you get bit by the trail bug, you're hooked. You find yourself looking for trails everywhere, and they are everywhere. They were everywhere in ancient times. Traces of them are still there. And those of us who have got hooked on this craze already are so happy to share it with others who will have the same thing and who will then work for trails. And there is a lot of good news about trails right now. The big case on Maui that ended not long ago about the Haleakala Trail.
Tell us a little bit about that, because we did talk a little bit on this radio station. I know Tim and Hope brought that up as an issue. But tell us a little bit of the significance of that that ruling.
Well, you mentioned before the Highways Act of 1892, the beautiful soul of Queen Liliuokalani must be happy about the results of this trial, because it really used her law that protects the right of the public to use any trail that was in existence before 1892. So that's the ancient trail encyclopedia right there. And so that really gives us, the public, the right to use this trail, especially after the state has asserted what it should always do, its claim to it. And the whole issue in the trial was over that, about whether or not that trail was an ancient trail, whether it had been open to the public, whether it had been used repeatedly. And finally, the jury found that in all cases it was, and the public does have a right to use that. So that's a very significant case over there. And as far as the good things that are happening over here on the Big Island, one of them is that we're going to get a new campus for our University of West Hawaii here on the west side.
Wow.
It's at a place called Palamanui. And there I've been engaged to find, clean, put back in the great shape that it was once in, the Major Malcolm Mackay Trail that runs down through that territory and near our campus, as a trail that will be a public access trail. This is just a remarkable thing for a developer to I'll be making available to the public a trail, and hopefully it will set a precedent. Certainly the people that formed Haleakala Ranch saw that need when they got possession of the land where the Haleakala Trail ran up to the crater and the summit. And so maybe that will happen to more landowners, that they will see that there are many advantages to having an old trail on their property. And here we are working on this trail now. Cleaning a trail means really bringing it back to life again. So it's beautiful, as the trails were in their heyday. They were gorgeous. There's a wonderful calendar that was done in 92 called Historic Hawaiian Trails that shows just how beautiful ancient Hawaiian trails are. And so the beauty of trails, the mystery, the magic, the importance, and the connections that are all part of trail world is being brought back to life as we bring this trail here back to life, and any others that you folks will work on there or in any of the islands will be a huge boon to the public. You really can be connected to the whole history of Hawaii through walking on an ancient trail, and that means the natural history of Hawaii as well as the human history. So the potential here for trails becoming something that we all need, more outdoor time and getting out there and getting in touch with the land. I love the quote by John Muir, a naturalist, where he says, "One who walks in nature always receives more than he seeks." And that's definitely the case with walking on trails. The mana, the energy you feel when your feet are on those stones that have been worn by centuries of feet passing over them, it really is a powerful thing. It's just like the Chinese qi or the Japanese kami. That kind of energy, spiritual energy, is very much a part of the whole trail world. And the more that we can make these accessible to people, the more that energy will become part of the lives of all of us.
Excuse me, Dr. Stevens, I had heard you, you know, as you were just talking here, talking about a developer and the advantages to having these trails opened up on their properties or in their vicinities. You know, can you expound a little bit upon that? What are some of those advantages?
First of all, I think the advantage is because the principal advantage is that you feel that you are doing the pono thing. And whenever one is in pono, a state of pono, I think that good things will flow from that. And so when you're doing the right thing, which is being in accordance with the law and in accordance with the fact that trails were made to be walked upon and accessed, the various important features of any ahupua'a, that when you're doing the right things will come from it. And the gentleman who formed Haleakala Ranch and then promoted the trail as the way to get up to the crater and the summit saw that they had financial advantages that were coming to them. And they were very correct. It was of great financial advantage. So there's certainly that potential. But I think there's a higher good than that, and that is the pono good, and that gets into the spiritual realm too. And it's just doing the right thing and seeing that right things flow from that.
Well, we thank you so much, you know, for telling us that, you know, and I'm hoping that, you know, the listeners out there, hopefully some of them being, you know, developers as well as private landowners, you know, can come to that understanding. You know, I mean, it's great when you're able to afford, you know, a large land or a tract mass like this. And at the same time, when you're able to share it, that kind of goes back to the initial, you know, feeling of wealth. You know, I believe that the Hawaiians used to have, you know, wealth was not something that was supposed to be hoarded, you know, or kept in. Your wealth really came is when you're able to put out and share as much as you had, because you were able to see how much, you know, the beneficiaries of your wealth as you were sharing it and how it enlightened and enhanced their livelihood, that's when you literally, you know, were recognized as a person of having true wealth. you know, by being able to share that and putting it out there for everyone and all folks, you know, to be able to utilize and to, you know, to deal with. You know, so, I mean, we really appreciate your words and putting that out there and having that inner spiritual kind of connection and tie, you know, not only to our ancestors, but also to create, you know, for what will be in the future and what we're trying to do, this preservational element, you know, and holding truly the aspects of the culture and its existence and its breath, its vitality, you know, so that it does not ever become dormant, you know, or laid to rest. You know, it's just, it's sad when we see those kind of things, you know, participating or happening, you know, and this is not what we should be about here on Hawaii. You know, so we appreciate what you're doing. I know that you also share with me a wonderful, you know, tidbit when you were starting on this trail restoration project and how you folks had come across and were clearing some fountain grass, you know, which is, I guess, almost synonymous with our guinea grass here on Kauai. You know, these big tufts, and how you unveiled something. And I'll let you take the story from here, Dr. Stevens.
We began work on this trail with a group of co-teachers from what's called the Freedom School here. It's a project of the Children's Defense Fund, and a lot of my students are actually the co-teachers in this program, summer program for youth at risk in particular. And so here we were out there the first day of work to begin bringing this trail back to life again. So this is an exciting thing. You're going to resurrect an ancient trail. You just gotta feel like the ancestors are looking down on you and smiling, and the queen herself has to be very pleased about this also. And I think part of it happened that we were actually rewarded then with the discovery of a beautiful petroglyph at the beginning of the trail. It hadn't been found before by the archaeologists, completely hidden by fountain grass. And so that was just an incredible bonus to our labors out there to discover this previously, or at least for probably a couple of centuries, unknown wonderful masterpiece of rock art there. And that started us off with a tremendous feeling of energy and really blessing from above to our labors out there. Have we lost contact?
You know, just because we can't see them does not mean that they're not there, you know? And when you're able to do something like that, it's like, wow, I could, I don't know. Every time you tell me the story, I'm still kind of getting the chicken skin, you know, when you talk about this, because truly, you know, the mana is that alive and that breathing. And, you know, for us, you know, as passionate as we are about trails and things of that nature on our island and the preservation of this, wow, to be able to have, I mean, like you said, when you're really into it and you discover something like that, you know, that's been, I won't say, just silently waiting, you know, for that moment in time to be unveiled again, you know, and then here you do, like you said, a beautiful piece of nature, the fountain grass, you know, that was there, just kind of preserving it, waiting for that moment that you, with these youth, you know, coming out there and helping to literally do the unveiling process. And when you did that, it's like, wow, you know, bestowed such an energetic release, you know, in a form of something that was still being preserved, you know, in a pohaku, you know, on the rocks, you know. Wow. I can only imagine, once again, you know, just how exhilarating, you know, that entire process was.
Well, that shows the enduring nature of trails, too, is that trails are tough. You know, they can be cut by a bulldozer, and they can be restored again across the cut. They can live for years out there undetected and come to life again when you go to clean them. The journey on any trail is a huaka'i. It's an adventure. It's a quest. And are you hearing me now, Tim?
Yep.
Oh, yes, I am.
And we actually have a phone call. Somebody would like to make a comment or address a question to you, sir. Caller, you're on the air with Dr. Stevens.
Hi, can you hear me, Dr. Stevens?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, on Kauai, a lot of the trails that I've been on are occupied by these dirt motorcycles that run all over the trail.
and it seems to be, it destroys the trail, and but DNR seems to be unresponsive. They won't bother coming out. They don't seem to care. Also, the Napili Trail, the Napali Coast, a couple years ago, National Geographic wrote an article, and they said it was really shameful what's happened to that trail and some of the areas along the trail. Can you comment about how we can get, you know, like these dirt motorcycles off of our hiking trails and do something about the coastline here that's being destroyed by too many people?
Well, I think a good step in that direction, a good first step, is this this workshop that's going to be held over there on your island, that it's going to bring forth problems like you're expressing here. And people who will have some possible solutions to this. This definitely sounds like something that you have to get the government involved in and its appropriate agency. But I think just having a workshop in which people like yourself can come forward and bring those problems that you have observed yourself to a group which will have some suggestions. Maybe people have encountered that before. That isn't something that we've had over here, but certainly there'll be other people that will have some ideas about the proper way to approach motorized vehicles on trails. They weren't made for that. They can be fixed up again. Once you get those motorized vehicles off there, you can fix them. You can put them back into the kind of beautiful shape that they were when they were first made. So you don't want to lose hope with something like this. You just want to think about what is the way that we're going to be able to, first of all, keep away the offending vehicles and then bring that trail back to its glorious former condition.
Now, Dr. Stevens, you know, over here on our northern coast, you know, we have the Napali Coast, you know, which is just, it's famous, you know, for its steep cliffs, hillsides, you know, things like this, which just, you know, fall off into the precipitous, you know, kind of ocean and things like this. And so if there was a trail and by chance there was like a natural, you know, landslide or something of this nature, and that part of the section of the trail now has slid into the ocean, you know, through this process, I mean, does the trail at that point become segmentalized? Or if you were to use it, I mean, and I'm just talking from my common sense, would I not then try to find a connecting way or a route to then continue, even though it may not be a piece of the old or ancient trail, but then still use a trail that could be usable and safe to then connect those two portions, you know, that are still in existence? Is that a process that happens, and is that something, you know, that is logical and feasible to still be dealing with?
That's been going on since people began making trails, that, you know, change is the name of the game in history, and that includes trails, too, that erosion and other factors will damage trails, wipe them out in some places, or at least sections of them. So trails have been under construction in various ways since the first trails were made by the first people that arrived here. So it's just another chapter in the story of trails, that if you lose a section of a trail, you look for a way to connect that trail again. And if it requires somewhat of a roundabout journey to get to the point that you want to be at, then that's what you have to do. But definitely trails are not something static. They're dynamic. They're living. They're changing. Part of a living culture, as Debbie Chang said, they're living treasures. And living things, of course, change. So it's just the name of the game. Another aspect of this, the magic and the mana of trails, and a good thing to think about whenever we're on one, is that you become part of a great procession. You can think of yourself standing at a trail, and everybody who's walked that trail before you, they're kind of going off into the past, to the very first person that ever came there. That's a real staggering thought, to think that, okay, now here I am on the trail. Now it's my turn to walk the trail. Now it's my turn to fix the trail. It's my turn to clean the trail. It's my turn to protect the trail. And that really puts a lot of responsibility on us to be true to our place in the great procession. And I think if we all think like that in all of the things we do, we will make this age of restoration happen, and trails will be one of the things that will lead us there.
Mm. Well, thank you, Dr. Stevens, for joining us here on Kauai Community Radio. We look forward to having you here on island to be part of this Preserving Ancient Access seminar that will be happening at Kauai Christian Academy Gym on the 16th of August. That's a Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can't catch it all. You can catch parts of it. It's on the Lighthouse Road, the Christian Academy Gym in Kilauea. Dr. Richard Stevens will be one of several. Dennis Hart is one of them. Tom Pierce, Teddy Blake, Mary Jane Naone, Eric Burton, Debbie Chang, and Lucien Denaev, all experts and knowledgeable individuals in their field, talking about trail restoration, trail preservation, access issues, and some of the behind-the-scenes stories that will be going on. Dr. Stevens, we appreciate you joining us here on Kauai Community Radio. Any last words that you'd like to share?
You know, one thing good for us to think about as we work toward a new era in trails, which I think this workshop is definitely part of, is trail rangers, you know, docents for trails, people who volunteer, and perhaps even a core of people who are paid to do this, to take care of the trails, to explain the trails to people that are coming there, to explain appropriate behavior on the trail. This would be an interesting kind of concept. We have, you know, rangers for our forests. How about rangers for the trails also?
There we go. Somebody brought that up, one of the candidates, to create an iSpy for the INA. This would fall kind of right in the same thing, where we're stewards, where we're taking care of, where we're being responsible users and trying to educate others to be likewise. Great, great advice, and I appreciate you sharing that with us as we move on to the next segment of this Kauai Community Radio. Dr. Stevens joining us from West Hawaii on the Big Island, and we'll be here on August 16th, Saturday, to be part of this Preserving Ancient and Access Seminars. Dr. Stevens, thank you for joining us here on Kauai Community Radio.
Well, thanks to all of you for doing what you're doing over there and making it possible for us to reach out to the larger world. It's a great service.
Well, thank you, and hopefully we'll be able to have you back on the radio before the Preserving Ancient Access seminar in August. Thanks again, Dr. Stevens, for joining us here on Kauai Community Radio.
You're welcome.
Aloha, and have a great night. You stick around. We've got Jazz with John here in a couple of minutes. I want to let folks know that there's a statewide event going on right now as we speak on Oahu, on Kauai, the Big Island, Maui. It's a talk story session. It's with Filipino community leaders Dr. Romeo Quijano and Gilbert Sape, talking about health, community, and food sovereignty, lessons from the front line. These leaders from the Filipino community are coming to talk about their organizing experience in the Philippines and empower communities with resources to take control of their health, workplace, and food systems. They will share their international experience and expertise in toxicology, pharmacology, toxic chemicals, and how the precautionary principle applies to agricultural practices and community wellness. Both will highlight the important role Filipino history and cultural values can play in empowering communities who are demanding corporate responsibility, accountability, and fair, safe working and living environments. So Friday night in Kalaheo at the Kalaheo Community Center at 6 p.m. That's starting July 25th, Friday, 6 p.m. at the Kalaheo Neighborhood Center. Also on Oahu, that's tomorrow night, the dinner talk story at Roots Cafe. That's the 24th, I'm sorry, Thursday, 5:30 p.m. That's in Kokua, Kalihi Valley at Roots Cafe. That's on School Street. On Maui on the 29th at Talk Story Presentation. That's going to be at the Maui Waena Intermediate School. Maui Waena Intermediate School in Kahului. On the Big Island, the 27th is the date, 5 p.m. That's at the Pahala Community Center, corner of Kamani Street and Miley in Pahala, Hawaii. So that's a presentation on the 28th as well. That's at Wentworth Hall at the UH Hilo campus. If you want more information, you can go to the Hawaii Center for Food Safety and Action Fund on their Facebook page. You'll be able to get more information about that upcoming statewide conversation with Filipino community leaders, Dr. Romeo Quijano and Gilbert Sape. And I want to thank Tim Kalai for helping this out of the box Kauai Soapbox Live special happen. Want to thank you, the listeners, for joining us, and our underwriters and our community members who support. If you want more information about the access on the Preserving Ancient Access seminars, give a call at 8-